So today I'm doing something slightly different. I wanted to share with you some of the practices I use in my own life and the practices I use with my clients in bringing neuroscience and mindfulness to coaching. And the opportunity inside of listening to this episode is to really come away with a different way of thinking and seeing your relationship to yourself and others, but also potentially a different way of looking at relationship to happiness. So enjoy, and I look forward to hearing what you think. Welcome to This Human Life with the Philosophical Coach. I'm thrilled to have you tuning in. I'm your host, Sam Kukuthis, aka the Philosophical Coach, philosopher, Hume expert, and high performance coach. This podcast is designed for you to go from being the passenger in your life to the owner of your life. It is designed for you to go beyond who you know yourself to be, really. If that intrigues or excites you, then you are definitely in the right place. The ideas are drawn from neuroscience, philosophy, my coaching practice, working with elite leaders, and experience. You can expect candor, humor, vulnerability, and ideas which are unfamiliar to you, and some you may just plain disagree with. You'll also get the opportunity to hear from inspiring coaches and leaders. Now let's get ready to question what we know and go beyond our limitations. Generally in life, we avoid confrontation. Confrontation usually suggests that there's something wrong. And certainly for me, confrontation has had that connotation for as long as I can remember. I was not the kind of person who would get into a fight. I would stand back and, you know, not get involved. But in the last year, I've seen confrontation from a new perspective, which has nothing to do with the avoidance or the fighting or the violence which I associated the word with. And this is because language is like Plato. The context determines what the word means in that instance. In philosophy, they talk about this as context sensitivity. So when we're talking about confrontation, what we want to look at, or what I've started to look at, is where am I being confronted by the way I go about life just by default? And what I mean by default, I mean there is a way in which we interact with different situations. For some people, we talk about that as trigger points. There are things which trigger us, and from those triggers, we then act in accordance with a particular pattern of behavior. Certain habits have evolved over time, and that's what we act from. And that's our default pattern of acting. It's the default habits that we have adopted or come to have. Now, when we're confronted, we are looking at the default behaviors and habits that we have adopted, and we're seeing what the impact is where life doesn't work as well as we want, where something's missing from what it is we're out to accomplish. And it takes a real brutal honesty to do this. And it's confronting because it's uncomfortable. It's not what your brain wants. Your brain wants what's predictable. That's what the neuroscience teaches us, right? The brain, Lisa Feldman Barrett says, is not for thinking, it's for prediction. But how often do you actually act consistently with that thought? Oh, this is just predicting what I should do in this circumstance based on my default ways of acting. I'm guessing not that often. I'm guessing that most of the time you listen to the thoughts that you have as if they are still a reflection of who you are really. And I get that because I do it as well. Even though I've studied and practiced with masters who have really, you know, looked at what it is to go beyond who you are really is what's going on with you internally, I still find that there are times where I take on the significance of life as who I am as my thoughts, who I am as my feelings, who I am as my mental state, who I am as the pains I might experience in my body at some particular moments in time. But the beauty of all of this is that if you can see the nature of this, you can start to get beyond it. What do I mean by that? I mean, you can start to see a view of yourself which is not attached to these different kinds of states, these different internal states. And it's a challenge. I'm not going to pretend it's not a challenge, but it's a challenge because we are so conditioned to think as if all of it is us, as if what causes our action is the thought or the feeling, when, you know, the neuroscience teaches us that's not the case. We talk about the readiness potential, which it used to be thought that what causes action was, you know, a trigger in the brain prior to acting in about half a second. Now the readiness potential looks like something like 10 seconds. So 10 seconds before you act, the neurons are activating in a certain pattern for you to then, you know, act in whatever pattern it predicted. Now, if that's the case, then consider that it's not your thoughts that cause you to act. Consider that it's not your feelings that are causing you to act. So when you make the association, the common association between I have to feel a certain way in order to perform, you are in a kind of joke. Why do I say a joke? It's a joke because you're not present to the absurdity of what you're saying if the idea of the readiness potential actually makes sense. If it's not your feelings which have caused the action because the action's already been predetermined by the patterns of neurons which have been activated in the brain, then what that suggests is that you have fallen for the joke that you have some control over your emotions. That this is just, yet you are the one who causes and you control what is brought forth. No. It's lovely to think that. But I really want you to look for yourself. Like, how often can you say that when you experience pain, you brought that feeling on? Like, oh, I've now manifested pain. Maybe you want to say that. Maybe because you have lots of thoughts about experiencing pain, then you have more and more experiences which are consistent with feeling like you have pain. I don't want to deny that idea. But we want to question the notion that you're the one who is controlling it all. You know, if you just controlled your thoughts better, then life would be better. This is a seductive idea, but it's absurd. And again, it's absurd because it goes against what neuroscience teaches us. Neuroscience teaches us that it's not your thoughts that cause your action. You just associate that it was the thought which caused the action. But the brain is already readying itself to act. You just now have thought, oh, it's the thought which did that. No. So what does this all have to do with the initial idea of confrontation? Well, here's what I see. When we take seriously that there is something about who we are really, which goes beyond our thoughts, our feelings, our bodily states, our mental states, there's an opportunity to step into a world of who we are that we don't actually know, where there's something to discover, where we get to go beyond who we know ourselves to be in the world. But to be able to do that, we have to confront the absurdity of how we see ourselves already. We have to confront the absurdity that we're so certain of who we are. We utilize language all the time, which suggests that we have this identity and we're fixated on it. And that is the case independently of whether or not you're someone who doesn't think your identity is fixed. I'm not someone who thinks my identity is fixed anymore. And yet I can still find myself utilizing patterns of language where there is a structure of I am this way, I am angry, I am resentful, or whatever it is, right? Whatever the feeling happens to be in that moment, when I'm expressing that, I'm expressing it as a kind of identity belief in that moment, because that's the way it is coming forth from my mouth. And then I either catch this, or my coach helps me catch this, by looking at where am I creating a view which is holding me back in some particular area right this moment based on this assumption that this is who I am really. And this is not something which is special to those who have not done personal development, not experienced coaching. It's not special to someone who has done personal development. It's just part of the human condition in the way that we operate. We relate to ourselves at different moments in time as if we are our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our mental states. And there's nothing wrong with that. All there is a space to question, is that really us? And it's in the space of questioning, is that really us, that something else can unfold. And it's an unfolding, right? Because it's not like everything is suddenly revealed and you will never again relate to yourself from what's going on with you internally. No, that's just bullshit. That's not going to be the case. You're a human being. You're an imperfect human being. We all are. Sometimes we pretend we're not. But that's just a pretense based on your default ways of protecting yourself and looking good in the world. So I get it, because we all do that at different times. But what if you were to confront that? What if you were to look at where is it that the way in which I interact with life is from a place of feeling like I need to do something in order to appease this person, or in order to look good, or in order to be liked, or, you know, any of these very natural human tendencies which we have as social creatures who seek others, seek belonging, don't want to be on our own, who want acceptance, who want love. It's really natural with those tendencies for us to seek people's approval, to seek other people's love, to want others to accept us, to experience belonging from them. But the problem with all of that, and it's not a problem which is inherent, it's a problem in terms of the limitation it creates for ourselves, is that it makes it seem as if it's all dependent on others. It's dependent on how they see you for how you see yourself. Rather than you get to create who you are for yourself, and then that reflection can be put out in the world where others then get to see that and listen from it. If our perception of who we are really is dependent on what others think of us, then anytime they think poorly of us, we will be weaker in terms of our perception of ourselves. Rather than looking at, okay, what is this reflecting back at me in terms of who I see myself to be right now? What can I work on for myself such that I get past this default way of experiencing this encounter? And again, it's a challenge. You know, I'm constantly confronted by what it takes to be a leader. Now, part of what I do is research on the effective exercise of leadership. And this is not an ordinary discussion or conceptual view or look at leadership. This is not looking at theories around leadership. It's not looking at books around leadership. It's looking at what it actually takes to be a leader in the world. And it really involves stripping back all of the default ways of being and acting, which get in the way of being able to be effective. So stripping back who you see yourself to be really, because when we're basing what we can do in the world or what we can do in any particular moment or circumstance based on our default state, based on the way in which we relate to ourselves as our internal states, then we are limited because there is some constraint in terms of how we can act. There becomes many moments where we feel disempowered because we question whether or not we can do this. We say to ourselves, who am I? Who am I to do this? And every time we have that kind of thought, the thing to consider, I believe, is that we are just confronting our existing beliefs about who we are really. We're really righteous about those beliefs as well, without even knowing it necessarily. Because righteousness doesn't have to come from being right about what someone else thinks. The righteousness most often comes from being right about our own perception of ourselves. We talk about that as limiting beliefs normally. But what is a limiting belief? Consider that it's a belief that you hold on to because you know you are right about it. You have so much evidence for it that to consider life, or to consider that you are not subject to it, is nonsense. Why would you even consider the idea that this isn't a part of you, given all the experience you have to the contrary? And that's really seductive. as an idea. It's seductive, I know, because I've experienced that for myself. I've experienced the times, and I still experience times, where there is some limiting belief which is playing up, which gets in my way of how I see myself. And one of the beauties of having a coach is that they help me see where I'm stuck in that kind of view myself. Because what makes coaching so special, at least from what I've experienced, is that when you're coaching effectively, you're standing for a possibility about who the person is beyond who they know themselves to be, because you don't know them, quote unquote, as well as they do, which means you don't see them from all of the limitations that they see for themselves. You don't have all the evidence that they do. You don't have all the scripts that they've conditioned to have. So you're not listening to them from the same place that they're listening to themselves. In effect, you're almost like a blank slate. A person comes to you and they're speaking what they see, and then you're listening for what's in the way for them based on the way they see themselves. And then if they're effective as a coach, what ideally they're going to be doing, this is what I do with my clients, is I stand for a greater possibility of who they are really. Not from a place of we need to figure out who you are really, not we need to figure out what your actual purpose in life is, none of that stuff, because that can actually have a negative effect. It creates an experience of needing to get somewhere as if there is somewhere you can actually get to. Now, one of the most profound lessons that I've learned, and I continue to learn because it's an ongoing process, is to really see that there is no there. Like, if you looked for yourself at where you're physically located, you're not going to say there. If you are, maybe, you know, you're unique if that's how you think of it, but it's unlikely that the way you're going to relate to where you're located is there. And I want you to pause and think for this. Like, how do I consider myself? If someone says, John, where are you? Are you going to say, I'm over there? No. Most likely, you're going to say, I'm over here. Why is that? Because everything which is not you is there. Because you're the center of everything in your world. You relate to everything in your universe as if you're here and everything else is there. But consider it, if you're only ever here, then when you say, I'll be happy when I get there, there's a joke which you're not present to. There's an absurdity which you're not present to. You think that happiness lies out there, but you've just said that you're only ever here. So if you're only ever here and that happiness lies out there, then that sounds like you can never be happy. Because you always believe that happiness is based on something out there. And yet you're never there. But now you might be thinking, wait a second. Sometimes I do get there. Sometimes I get on a plane. I go from Australia to Paris. And I'm there in Paris. But look for a second. You might say to someone, I'll see you when I get there, where the spatial location of that place is there. But when you actually arrive in that location, do you say I'm there or do you say I'm here? Because if you're only ever located here, how could you ever be there? And if that's the case, then where are you striving for something in life which is over there? Where are you waiting for who you are to be someone when you get there? Life is full of illusions. Life is full of paradoxes. Hume used to say, one of the uniformities of human nature is that we're consistently inconsistent. What does that look like? It looks like a lot of different things, but here's one of them. We consistently have a point of view about who we are, which is inconsistent from moment to moment. At one moment, we are so critical of ourselves, and in the next, we are like, what was I talking about? What was I worried about? In a conversation, you can go from feeling like, wow, this is a great conversation, to be like, oh my God, I can't believe that person said that. And the judgment that we have sets in because we are whimsical in the way that our thoughts connect. Why is that? Because there are so many different activated patterns of neurons that are coming into play, which are looking to predict how to respond to different situations. And those default activated patterns of neurons are going to determine what comes forth unless we're able to pause. And we've trained ourselves to look at the situation newly. And it really is a training. It's not just like magically osmosis, you're not going to be reactive. You're not going to be triggered. No, trigger is just your default way of being and acting in that circumstance. When that thing arises, this is what happens to you. This is what you experience. And what my experience is teaching me is that the mistake is to think that you're in control of it. You literally caused it. And to test this, like, you know, look for yourself right now. What bodily sensations can you experience? Can you feel a clamminess in your hands? Do you feel the vibrations in your foot? Is there a tenseness in your muscles? Is there a trembling in the fingers? Right now, when I get present to the different bodily sensations I'm experiencing, I'm looking at my hand and I can see that it's just moving of its own accord. The fingers are moving up and down as if there was a keyboard in front of me, yet I'm not actually controlling it. I'm not causing it. It just is. When I relate to this as if I'm the cause of it, then it's really hard to be with it because it's like, oh, there's something wrong here. Like, why is that happening? Why are my fingers trembling? What's happening to me? As opposed to just noticing, okay, there's this sensation in my fingers right now. And what it looks like is that my fingers are involuntarily, seemingly, moving up and down as if there was a keyboard in front of me. And when you get into this quiet and stillness of the experience of life, life looks really different. Because when you're in the experience, you're not conceptualizing it. Instead, you're looking at the phenomenology. You're looking at what does it look like for me in this moment. And what you may or you may not notice is the calmness which comes over you when you're in the experience and when you're seeing the experience as separable from who you are really. If by contrast you relate to all of it as you, then you're going to try and fix it when it looks like something is wrong, when you're not sure about why it's happening that way, likely to occur as a problem. And when something occurs as a problem in life, we find it really difficult to be with it, generally speaking. Our automatic response is to figure out how to solve it. Problem solving is the way in which we link those two words. Problem solving is something that we really value in life. But we've created this really strong association between problem and solving. So whenever there is a problem, we need to fix it. We need to figure out the solution. But consider that the error in this way of looking at things is that it assumes that something is wrong and something is broken and something needs to be fixed in the first place. So I want to end this episode by looking at some of the key ideas that have been captured. And the importance of this is something that Jim Quick talks a lot about in his work on accelerated learning. And if we only hear an idea once, our retention rate is something like 10%. Yet the more we hear it, the more it is embedded in our learning. And even better than that is if we go and we share it with someone else. And so my invitation at the end of this is to share what you've learned from this episode with a friend or a colleague so that you get to really embed what you've learned. So here's what we've learned. We've looked at the idea that Lisa Feldman Barrett talks about, which is this distinction between the brain being not for thinking, but for a prediction. And if we take this into our life and we can see moment to moment the way in which it's the predictive mechanism of the brain, which is our default mode of being and acting, then there's an opportunity for us to get beyond how it is we go about life moment to moment in these situations. And then it also gives us a different opportunity to look at the context in which something looks moment to moment. What is the context in which you see when you go to work? What's the context which you see when you're going out on a night out? What's the context you have when you're about to have a conversation with your family? Whatever it happens to be moment to moment, there is some context which is decisive in how it shapes your experience. And the more you're present to what the context is, the more there's an opportunity to see, is that context one which is empowering me? And if it's not, what would be an empowering context which would shape and reframe my experience in this moment? And then we've also looked at this idea of confrontation, but not confrontation in terms of having to fight someone out there. And it's actually confronting what you see is a default way of going about life. And this can be challenging. And it's been challenging for me to go about this. And part of what I wanted to share in this episode is the challenges that I've been facing and share it, what it looks like, to see if it can make an impact for you. And then finally, what there's been an opportunity to do is to take some of these very common ideas like trigger points and limiting beliefs and to bring them into a different kind of language. So looking at limiting beliefs in terms of a righteousness, which is an idea that I talk about frequently in this podcast, and you can look in more episodes on that. And then with trigger points really are just the default experience that we have. What I suggested is the opportunity of this episode is to see how you can create a new relationship you have to happiness by really getting this absurdity of the relationship we have to waiting to get there in life. So I hope you found this really useful, and I'd love to hear what you think, and I can't wait to share with you next week. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Your support really means the world to me, and without it, this podcast wouldn't exist. And if you haven't already, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and please share your biggest takeaways or what you want to hear discussed by going to thisyoumeanlife.com. And if you're ready to go beyond who you know yourself to be really, then go to thephilosophicalcoach.com. I can't wait to talk with you soon.